It's just run from one commitment to another, and I sometimes feel a bit sorry for the children that they kind of get bundled through their day.
She goes, hurry up, and I'm still trying to do the thing I was doing.
6 o'clock in the evening arrives extremely quickly every day, usually without me having completed the tasks I set out to achieve.
I'll go the full day without even drinking or even eating. That's how bad it can get. So yeah, that's just what I need, that. Some help in advising and even just showing me how to still do the things I want to do, but slow it down a little bit.
Three people, three very busy lives, the volunteer, the businessman, and the working mother. And one thing in common, the desire to slow down. The ever-accelerating pace of life is a constant refrain. When did you last hear anyone admit to not having enough to do? We're all so busy, hectically busy, not enough hours in the day. And the statistics do bear this out. TUC figures show that last year, 5 million UK workers regularly put in extra hours for free. At Home Mumsnet says mothers tackle 10 challenges before 8:30 every morning and find it more stressful than a visit from the in-laws. Perhaps it's no wonder we'd like to slow down. But is it possible to do that and achieve the same results? That's the theory supported by the slow movement, and it's the straw to which our three participants decided to clutch when Radio 4 launched this experiment. For 1 month, we invited three people to slow down and see if their lives improved as a result. We put them in the hands of Carl Honoré, once a speedy journalist and now an ambassador for the slow movement.
The whole culture itself is drenched in this idea that faster is always better, so that there is now a very deep taboo against the idea of slow. It's a dirty word, it's a byword for lazy, unproductive, unmodern, boring. And I think what that means is that even when we can feel in our bones that it would be good for us to put on the brakes, we're afraid to do it.
So Carl, today we're doing something rather unusual. We're taking time out of our busy schedules to sit at my kitchen table and take a look at the pace of life. Why are we doing that?
It seems to me that the virus of hurry has infected every corner of our lives, so that for many of us, every moment of the day now feels like a race against the clock. And this is taking a toll on our health, our diet, our relationships, our communities, our work, our productivity, the economy in general, and the environment. And I think most people now have a sense that we're racing through our lives instead of actually living them.
Are we really any busier than we ever were? People have always been juggling their family lives, their social lives, their children, their work. You know, juggling is what we do.
I think since the dawn of the industrial era, as every component of our culture has accelerated, people have always complained that things were getting too fast. But it seems to me that in the last 15 years, we've really entered the stage of diminishing returns with this speedaholic, go faster, do everything at the same time culture. And maybe two things have happened that set this era apart from the times before. The first is that a lot of families have two working parents in them. You don't have the stay-at-home parent, usually the stay-at-home mother traditionally, who was there as a kind of slow anchor in the home. And then a second thing has happened in the last generation, and that is the technology boom. You know, if you go back 15 years ago, you left the office and that was it. Nobody could reach you. Now you can be halfway up Mount Everest and you'll get a text. So this temptation to be always on, to use that phrase
choice.
Of the moment.
That's choice.
It
we
is
have
choice.
A choice.
We do have a choice. Absolutely. And that's what the slow movement says, which is to exercise your choice to switch them off. Use some discipline, but we don't. That's the trouble now.
Sounds good in theory, but how realistic is it for genuinely busy people to apply the brakes? And doesn't being busy give our lives meaning, render us indispensable, and make others think we're important? We're going to put Carl's thesis to the test. Despite my enduring scepticism, I've realised that even my doorbell sounds frenetic. Our three volunteers are arriving for their first session with their slow coach, Carl. He asked each of them to keep a diary for a week before this meeting to find out what the pressures are in their lives and what's making them feel too busy.
My name's Steve Woods. I live in Clitheroe with my wife Julie and my rather large family. In 2007, I was persuaded by some former colleagues to start a new business. helping the water utilities to prevent pollution. My working day, I arrive in the office 8:15, 8:30, and 6 o'clock in the evening arrives extremely quickly every day, usually without me having completed the tasks I set out to achieve. Hopefully, on a good day, I'll have done 80% of what I hope to do. On a bad day, I may only have tackled 10%. So I want to be more efficient in what I do and feel less that a high workload is getting on top of me.
I noticed looking at your diary, actually, that there didn't seem to be any downtime during the day, that you really moved seamlessly from one task to the next. Is that right? There was no moment?
That's pretty well it, yeah.
The thing that really jumped out at me was the photograph that you sent of your desk, which had the two the two screens open. I think it was an iPhone, was it? Propped up in the center, another phone underneath, a keyboard. And I saw that and I just thought, distraction.
In Steve's case, the pressure comes from his workload. For others, it comes from family life.
My name is Lizzie. I'm a mum of three children who are 10, 8 and just 4. I also work part-time for the NHS. I work 20 hours a week. What I find is, really, since I've had children, it's just run, run, run from one commitment to another. And I sometimes feel a bit sorry for the children that they kind of get bundled through their day. And it's one thing me choosing to be busy, 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 but it's another subjecting them to that pressure, really, when they've only got one childhood and I want to make it a good childhood. And I'm hoping to learn a little bit more about picking out the most important aspects of family life and enhancing that, but not necessarily at the expense of a working home-life balance.
I was looking over your diary, okay, and it got me thinking what you were saying about always looking at the clock and so on. I think that what we often do nowadays is that when we schedule activities, we schedule them too tightly. We don't allow enough time between things to get from swimming to the school. It takes us 5 minutes, so we schedule 4 minutes. And I would just suggest that you think about adding a few more minutes in that space in between activities.
Third, but no less busy, is Scott, who doesn't have children at home and isn't in paid employment, but still finds life too hectic.
My name's Scott Richardson. I'm from Bury. The last 4 years I've been part of an organisation, which is Lions Clubs International. The reason why I've been doing that is because I broke my back in an injury. I'd used all my savings, so I ended up on benefits, and I wanted to give something back rather than just claiming benefits and not doing nothing. And within that time, I've been Carnival Chairman, President, Second Vice President, First Vice President. I've been a District Officer. I've now just taken on the PR role, and every day I'm literally emailing, phone calls, etc., etc. I just keep saying yes, yes, yes all the time.
I think the first tip would be, and this is going to sound maybe even a little scary, to do less, to say no. I mean, you're someone who loves being active, busy, but if you've got your finger in too many pies, then all of those pies are going to suffer. So I think over the next couple of weeks, every day, just find one thing that in the past you would have said yes to, just say no to it.
It's going to be hard saying no.
It's very hard at first. Okay, my second tip, I want you to try and find some kind of slow ritual or activity, something that you enjoy doing, but that just shifts you into a lower gear, that helps you connect with your inner tortoise. And for some people, it's gardening, it might be cooking, it could be yoga, it could be painting, it could be reading a book, something that acts as a break, and build that into each day.
So Scott, Lizzie and Steve set out on their experiment with some practical techniques to slow their lives down. Yet I wonder if they're suffering from what the New York Times recently termed institutional self-delusion. We all love being busy, don't we? I'm just not convinced our intrepid trio will be able to put Carl's advice into practice. So we decided to eavesdrop on them in their own environments to see how they get on. Steve's in Lancashire at his office as he puts Carl's suggestions into operation in the first week of the experiment. He really has resolved to make changes.
First of all, I'm going to switch my email system off for an hour in the morning, an hour in the afternoon, and even though we have customers in different time zones, I'm going to make sure that they understand that I'm not going to be checking emails in the evening after 8 p.m. I'm going to try each day to select one task which I would normally just do, and I'm going to consciously delegate it to an associate or a colleague. And I'm going to take a physical break to do something that I used to do, which is walk around the factory and meet up with other members of the staff. You know, just have some breathing space away from the desk. How's it going today?
Very well, yes.
Well, today's been a mixture of setting up a new client on our software, and one of them has made an inquiry about...
I find Steve's very busy, and getting his time is quite difficult sometimes.
He's always busy.
We don't see him that much because he's busy.
I can certainly see it would be beneficial for Steve to slow down perhaps a little bit more.
I'm doing it, yes, for me, but for the company too, because I believe that if I can benefit from it, then I have colleagues who can benefit too. I shut down my emails this morning for an hour and this afternoon for an hour, and I still found myself looking up at my screens, but because they were blank, it was a bit spooky. I really felt quite strange, and I think I'm going to have a few more days of doing that before I start to get used to it.
Numerous studies over the years have left little doubt that working long hours takes its toll, not just on the worker, but on family and relationships.
Hi, Julie, I'm home.
Hi there.
Steve's wife, Julie, knows the effects.
Whatever Steve does, he wants to do it to the best of his abilities, and consequently, that often takes more time than he expects. So even when we're at home or on holiday, the office comes with us, so we have three people in our relationship.
Sometimes it's 8 or 8.30 when I get home in the evening, and I don't particularly want to continue to do that, working long hours, 5 days a week, when I'm not in the first flush of youth, is something that I certainly handled better when I was 35, not when I'm 55.
By the second week of the slow coach experiment, Steve is facing up to the impact his working patterns may have had over the past 20 years. Carl also asked all our participants to keep audio diaries.
Steve, Wednesday, 29th of May. I've been very disciplined this week and have closed down my email programme for an hour each morning, an hour each afternoon, and used the time, I believe, wisely to work on proactive tasks, some of which have been outstanding for a little while. It's great. It's really working. And I have successfully delegated two significant tasks this week to colleagues. I've invested the time during my email shutdown, and it really is paying off.
The fact that Steve stopped looking at his emails all the time is something that I've been telling him for a significant length of time, but he won't listen to me, but obviously will listen to other people. And delegating, I think I mentioned that another time too. So I'm obviously very much in favour of it.
Another part of the mentoring process for this experiment is a weekly catch-up with slow coach Carl by phone or Skype.
Hello, Steve.
Hi, Carl. Yes, I'm here.
It's good to be back in touch again. This is your slow headmaster checking in to see if you've been doing your slow homework.
I've been going incredibly slow. It really is making a difference, Carl. Shutting down my email program each morning for an hour and each afternoon for an hour is releasing me to do proactive work with little interruption. And I'm steaming on with things that were kind of bottlenecked. It's great.
Great to hear. Have you had any blowback from the people that you are emailing, people who are getting annoyed or cross or worried that you're not available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week?
Of course not, no, because that 1 hour really doesn't make any difference. And the sense of urgency was probably my overactive sense of responsibility rather than being based on a real need that's driven by any particular customers.
Okay, it all seems to be going rather well. Is there one aspect of the experiment that you found particularly difficult that we could focus on trying to get more progress on over the next week or so?
No.
So it's more of the same, is it?
I think it's more of the same. I genuinely hope that if I feel half as increasingly positive as we get towards the end of the project, as I do now, that it will have changed the way I work probably for the rest of my life. I actually went and had one of the most relaxing weekends this weekend I've had for quite some time. It was great.
Relaxing weekend? It's hard to believe, but also hard to argue with Steve's view of the experiment. If he's working more efficiently and paying more attention to family life, then it must be working for him. But for our second candidate, Lizzie, with a job and three young children, the juggle's a struggle.
So that's it for today. Was there anything else that anyone wanted to ask or anything that you wanted to change about the room layout?
As we join Lizzie in Doncaster, she's at the end of a working day, running a training session for health visitors. But there's plenty more to do.
It's been a great day, really thought-provoking, lots of discussion, but it's gone past 5 o'clock now and I've got to vacate this room. I've got to make sure that the key's returned with your reception. I've got to get back to my car and we've got to get to the childminders before 5:30, so I hope you can follow me quite quickly. Hi. Hi, Jazz.
I got glue in my hand.
Oh, no.
Feel the lump.
Right, you go around this side, Ellie, because there's no space there.
Mum, what are you going to have for tea tonight? Oh, what kind of salmon?
I managed to finish work on time last night and get home really quite quickly. But because I'd got home early, so I got home at 5 and was planning to go and get the children at 5:30. I was thinking, no, I've got 30 minutes. So I came in and I got changed. And it was a really lovely evening, so I thought, I'll just quickly put some washing on the line. It was a perfect drying evening. I'll just quickly check my emails. It'll save me having to do it later this evening. So it's really interesting. You have this 30 minutes that it becomes available, but my natural inclination is to fill it. So you're kind of your own worst enemy.
My mum is a lot more busy than my dad. She gets out of bed very early. And she goes downstairs, makes a cup of tea, gets all the breakfast cereal out on the desktop, and then she goes all the way upstairs, and then she does girly stuff, and then she has to get Isabel up, get Isabel changed. I don't know if she cleans Isabel's teeth or not. And then she would take Isabel to school, and then she would probably put the washing out if it's a sunny day, but every time she puts the washing out, it rains, so she takes it back down and it stops raining. And I don't know, she'll probably go and have a lie down, tired for putting all the washing out.
Okay, so if I remember rightly, I've been asked to do 3 things. One thing is to try and build a little bit more time between things so that I have more time to get to and from places, for example. And the second thing was to try and incorporate family time with chores. So, for example, getting dinner ready with the children. And then the other thing was to bring the calendar to the family table with the family and each week just look ahead at what activities can stay on the calendar and which activities maybe could not go on the calendar in the first place. And I feel able to do that. Breaking news. The youngest one asked if she could help me make dinner, and ordinarily I would say no because I'd be in a bit of a hurry and want to get that done quickly. But tonight I said yes and I let her help me make dinner and she set the table for me and it was actually really lovely. Isabel, you can help me get tea ready. Huh? You gonna help me get tea ready?
Not again!
Not again! Hello, it's Lizzie.
Hi, Lizzie.
Hi, Carl.
Hi there. I feel a little bit like checking up on a pupil to see if she's been doing her homework.
So, I've got mixed news then, if that's the case.
Tell me, how's it been going?
Yeah, it's been interesting. It's been quite busy, so consequently it's difficult sometimes to actually carve off the time to do the things that you've asked us to do. Sorry, Carl, we still haven't sat down with our family calendar.
Well, the thing about slowing down is that nowadays everybody's so impatient that they even want to slow down fast, right? And it doesn't it doesn't work that way. It is a slow process.
I mean, something that I have been aware of is the fact that, generally speaking, I'm the one that knows where the children are and what they should be doing on each day and who's caring for them and what time they're meant to be picked up. And although Greg's great to chip in and do the things that I ask him to do when I ask him, he perhaps doesn't have the same information held in his head. It's how now I get all the information out of my head down on paper so that he can see where he can take the reins a bit more, perhaps.
It will be worth it for you, I think, not just in the way of finding the right balance of activities, but also rethinking how you share the burden of running that family schedule with Greg.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Good luck.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks, Lizzie. Bye-bye.
Two-thirds of mums like Lizzie admitted in a poll for Mumsnet recently that they're struggling to juggle everything. So it's hardly a surprise that Lizzie hasn't succeeded with all the challenges Carl set her, which highlights for me that slowing down isn't for everyone. Some people won't be able to slow the pace, and some won't live or work in the kind of environment that allows them to slow down. Some people simply like to, or have no choice but to, go fast, which I pointed out to Carl.
The essence of the slow philosophy is about finding the right tempo for you. We all have our own personal metronome. What's very fast to me might seem slow to you. So it's about giving people the freedom, the space, and also the courage to move through their lives at the right tempo.
I think what worries me, what really concerns me about this, is that slowing down is a luxury for the affluent. They can afford to get other people to be busy on their behalf. A lot of people don't have the choice to slow down. They've got children to look after, they've got parents to look after, they've got part-time jobs, they've got the house to take care of.
I disagree. I think part of the reason people think that is that they associate slow with the upmarket. I mean, I think of slow as being a very simple idea, which is that you arrive at each moment trying to do whatever it is you have to do. You're trying to do that thing not as fast as possible, but as well as possible.
Volunteer number three, Scott, depends on doing things fast. He's been on benefits for 4 years since he had his accident. He may have had difficulty finding paid work, but he's been pulling his weight around his local town of Bury. He runs every sort of community activity, from the Lions Club to the local carnival. One of the things Carl's been adamant about is that Scott has to learn to say no.
I was at a meeting the other night and I was asked to set up a Facebook page for this particular event, which is a convention next year. And they was pretty much looking at me and I kept quiet. I really did keep quiet. And I felt guilty to a degree because they were staring at me. But I said yes, but I did say that I couldn't do anything until August because I've got a lot of my commitment now. So I think the no, even though I didn't say no, I think, you know, I think I can live with that.
That's an important first step for Scott. And at the end of week two, he's feeling the benefits.
Saturday, 1st of June, audio diary. Today's been extremely quiet, which I did actually plan, even considering I've got quite a lot on throughout the next 7 days ready for the carnival. But I'm trying to pace myself. Doing this programme, the slow coach, is actually really helping. Normally, every single day, I'd be mad, busy, crazy, thinking that I had to return an email, thinking that I had to return a phone call as soon as possible. I've learnt to be able to put it in some sort of perspective.
Carl also asks Scott to introduce a slow ritual into his daily routine, and he chose ironing.
I'm on a bit of a polo t-shirt now, so I always fasten the buttons up when I iron. I don't know, it just makes me think differently and a bit more relaxed. I think it brings me down to earth. Because when I was in the army, I used to love the ironing. This was one of my fortes, apparently, when I was a serving soldier. And it's just bred in me now. And I'm nice and relaxed now. Another hanger for my second garment. I am really slowed down as such. My life is slowed down because I'm actually stood here doing this. Sounds great, doesn't it? The sound of steam.
2 weeks into the experiment, and the three participants and coach Carl have a get-together in Manchester to discuss how they're feeling about the experiment at the halfway mark.
Hello. Hi there. Hi. Nice to see you. Good to see you.
Good morning, Carl. How are you doing? All right.
I've recognised that the only times when I ever felt mildly stressed was when I had too much information coming in at the same time. Mm. And to be able to shut out a major source of that for a period during the working day and focus on just one thing at once has made a huge difference. It's made me realise that I can be calmer at other times as well.
I've started to put plans in place to perhaps let go of some of the responsibilities that I take upon myself in coordinating things at home. And I've got a wonderful husband, but maybe what I need to get better at doing is letting go. I did leave him a list of things to do, you see, on Friday, and it was wonderful, but I felt so bad doing it, honestly.
It was interesting that you all put your finger on this idea of having a voice from outside your normal lives, asking you maybe questions that were swirling around in your own minds, but you hadn't maybe confronted or dealt with. I think that slowing down, this whole slow coach experiment, is about so much more than just ticking a few boxes or implementing a few simple techniques or pulling a few levers in your daily life. It's really about ultimately stepping back and looking at the big picture. You know, what kind of life do I want to lead? What kind of person do I want to be? What sort of family life do I want around me? And that's a hard thing to confront when we just get stuck in the daily grind.
Well, I have to admit that despite my reservations, things seem to be going fairly well. I haven't slowed down, but Carl's advice has proved beneficial to all three of our experiment's participants. I still think that you can't really change people, and that their beginner's enthusiasm could well dissipate by the end of a month. In next week's programme, we'll find out if it lasts. Carl Honoré sums up the experiment so far.
The scorecard at halftime reads a bit like this, that Lizzie, some successes, some progress, but still struggling a little bit, especially with the challenge of letting go. Scott and Steve, it all seems to be going very, very well. How lasting will these changes be? You know, how sustainable? So I think the challenge for all of us now is to keep moving forward in the ways in which this experiment has worked for us, but also to find other ways in which we can embed these changes and make them deeper and permanent.